So, Kevin, I can sympathize with the loose nut behind the yoke, as it were, here. I get this pilot's confusion, and it's because I've been searching for some authoritative source that says, on an approach with a bend at the final approach fix, when you're getting vectored to final, the vectors take you to this leg or that leg, and I can't find it. And I think we'd agree that the phraseology here is lacking, right? The idea to join the final approach course when that's really not what I would say you're doing, that's not ideal, but I accept that that's correct. My question is, how is a pilot supposed to know this?
I don't think there's any one great way to know it in advance. Really, the best way to do that is to be in the airplane and know definitively that you're getting a vector to final. And if you see these bends like this approach has in the approach, activate vectors to final and you'll see what the course is that way. But you should, ideally, you're going to see these different bends in the approach and be prepared to see what the final approach course that you're being vectored to will be when you activate the vectors to final.
Sure. And it's a little bit late in the moment to ask, but if the pilot were to ask, hey, is this, do you want me joining the 326 course or the extension of the intermediate leg? You would understand the question because from what I understand, you had this same discussion in within your facility.
That's true. A better way to ask it might not be necessarily the numbers, but the fixes, because the controller that's working isn't necessarily going to be looking at the approach plate. They're going to be looking at their video map, which is overlaid on the radar scope. And they'll be able to look at the fixes, but that on the ATC scope, it's not going to show what those courses are. So to identify the fixes is a better way to communicate that with ATC.
Sure. So you'd say, are you vectoring me to the leg between, I don't remember the fixes, but the intermediate.
Eric and Dorpy. Like,
Eric and Dorpy. It is.
Eric, or you could nail that down very easily with ATC. And you could even negotiate that with ATC also. If you had the procedure loaded a certain way, you could ask ATC, hey, can I expect to join this? And ATC might say, well, sure, if you'd like to do that, then expect that.
Sure. Anybody else here have a different plan?
I know so many pilots are taught, and I will as well, to when they're loading an approach, load either an initial or an intermediate fix for the start of it. And then they all say, and then I'm going to activate leg, but I actually advise them not to do that. The reason I'll advise loading a full approach is quite often ATC is going to send you either to an initial or an intermediate because they don't want to figure out what the wind's doing and it's much easier for them. They might say proceed direct. In this case, they might say proceed direct Caelid expect vectors. I do not, though, activate a leg because it could create exactly the confusion that this created for this pilot here. But the big clue to me, if I were flying this, is I do know, and I teach all my learners, that there are typically going to be two turns when you're on vectors, a 90-degree base leg, and then a 30-degree intercept. And to be prepared for those so that when they tell you turn, whatever the heading might be, you're prepared to turn and do your navigation and then finally talk. Be prepared for that. In this case, the controller gave that 30-degree intercept, and I'm looking at there, and even though the GPS might be off 2 or 3 degrees, and that's certainly not uncommon, there's the 30-degree intercept between that leg, between Herrick and Dorpy. I personally will load the initial, but when they say fly heading so-and-so vectors, I activate vectors to final, and it sells everything for me. And in addition, then I get cross-track error on how far I am from that course to intercept it. I know how to set my powers, get configured, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, and loading vectors to final would get it right here because Garmin apparently uses the same rule that vectors to final goes to the last intermediate segment before the final approach fix and an extension of that. So that would have got it right. And I like the idea that if you're sharp here, you would notice that it's a 40-degree intercept to that Caelid to Herrick leg and rule that out.
I teach my students to be a little more assertive with ATC in situations like this. So you got your initial clearance via a vector and an altitude toward a Plymouth. As I was getting myself reorganized, because that wasn't my planned alternate, and I'm looking at the chart and figuring out where I am, I'm saying, boy, I'm in a high-performance airplane. I'm going to request direct masky, and then I can fly the procedure from there, and I can load that, and I have got time to set up my airplane it's sort of like asking ATC for a delay vector while you get caught up if the plan has changed suddenly at the end. And I just watch too many pilots trying to scramble around with all the things, the possibilities on this approach. Which leg are you going to join? Are you going to activate vectors to final? And they're trying to do all this in real time while they're zooming along. It would be much better to say, I'm going to go to a known point. And then if I'm flying that leg from Maskey or I'm heading toward Maskey and I decide, okay, I'm caught up, you could then request something different from ATC and say, hey, can I get a vector to join final now or whatever you would like to do. But this gives you a little chance to have the navigator help you out in the cockpit. It's got the fixes. If you're using an autopilot, it's great. You can then get your act together.
So you would have requested something different in advance. If you were in this pilot's position and you hadn't done that and you just activated vectors to final like the pilot did and saw the magenta line there, would you trust that Garmin has it right? Or would you kind of on principle say, I don't really know what's going on here. I'm going to ask for a different plan.
I'm going to ask for a different plan. If I see a situation like we've described in the scenario, I'm going to say, boy, there's a lot of lines now suddenly on my map and I'm confused. And I'm going to ask ATC, or maybe I'm going to request, hey, can you give me a vector between Caled and Herrick? Or can you give me a, you know, what's going on here? I don't understand. Always clarify if you're not clear what's going on. I'll make one other minor point here, and that is the scenario talks about these minor differences in the courses that you see on the chart versus what the GPS is showing you. And that's a point of confusion for a lot of pilots. And there's a section in the AIM that talks about this, that it's the different way that procedure designers lay out courses versus how GPS units calculate magnetic deviation based on where you're going. And it often results in minor differences in the courses that you see between what's on your chart and what's in the box. And that's acceptable. It's normal.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, I'm sort of with Bruce, with my super Homer mentality. If I start trying to activate legs and compare courses, I'm going to get behind that 310 pretty fast, I think, in this environment. So I need to solve it simply. I need to tell ATC, look, I'm a little confused here. I'd like to go direct to, if you want to make Caleb or whatever the intersection is, I know how to do direct. If I start messing around with activating legs, I've seen guys get buried pretty deep in that box at a bad spot on the approach. And so for that reason, I would just admit it and say, I need some more time and maybe I just need a vector till I get my brain around what we're doing here.
And even in this moment, direct to Herrick would probably even work, right? That's a legal clearance that you could get, right? And
everybody knows where that direct button is.
So I go back to something Bruce said, is that you're already on a missed approach. You've done a missed. You start to, the heartbeat starts to climb a little bit. You start to get more excited about what's going on, whether or not you're going to be able to make it into the next place. So you start to develop a little bit of this kind of tunnel vision. So it's always best to slow things down as much as possible in this case, and to be thrown with a potential, again, think about the chain, accident chain. This is just another, potentially weak link in the chain. It's really a good idea to kind of slow things down as much as you can during this particular approach, and try not to accept anything that's unusual or at least makes you feel uncomfortable.
I'd like to go back, Kevin, to what you said about not being cleared to any fix that isn't either an initial or an intermediate. And I wonder if that is a Boston TRACON procedure or not, because I fly the RNAV-24 into Dutchess County I don't know how many times.
Same here.
There's a fix called JUVBI. Mm-hmm. It's the top of the T. It is not an intermediate fix. It is not an initial fix.
Yep.
And yet I get cleared there all the time.
Correct.
So is this a difference between TRACON procedures or?
I think that anybody that's spent any time flying in New York approach airspace has probably got some similar stories of different things that they do. But I think what it comes down to is that not even necessarily just about this, but about many other things. If a controller assigns you a routing or gives you a control instruction or anything like that, and it doesn't cause you to get near unsafe proximity to terrain or other traffic, and you're able to successfully fly the approach that way, then probably it's not going to catch the attention of anybody that is looking at those sort of details. So that you can successfully do it doesn't mean that it's specifically allowed as something that ATC is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, to be clear, I wasn't suggesting that you could start the approach from Herrick just from any arbitrary direction. My understanding that's possibly incorrect is that you could kind of go use direct Herrick in lieu of vectors to final, so long as the direct to Herrick complies with the usual vectoring rules. It's within 30 degrees of the approach course. But that could be wrong.
I suppose in some sense here splitting hairs a bit. I think that if you are coming at Herrick from east and you are nearly on that Herrick-Dorpy leg or within 30 degrees of it, like you're saying, if ATC gave you direct Herrick to join the procedure but didn't clear you that way, could you do it that way legally? Probably. I think that would probably require a deep dive in the regs to really hash that out. But
in any case, that would be non-standard.
It would be non-standard. And ATC definitely couldn't say direct Herrick, cross Herrick at cleared approach.
Sure.
First of all, I want to know, where do you find the spouse that after only 2 years of marriage somehow greenlights the purchase of a 310? So if you could let me know about that, I'd love to hear.
It's all fiction.
Just to answer that, my wife is a pilot, and I highly recommend that. Okay. It makes a lot of judgment calls with spending money on airplane stuff a lot easier.
Right. Okay. Well,
we write the world that we wish existed, I guess, is the answer.
Okay. You know, just looking at this, you guys are all flight instructors and you're super analytical about this, but as Joe Average Pilot who's tooling along in my 310, if I had been issued that, I mean, when I read what it was that Kevin was saying and I looked at the options, I right away went to option two, which was to activate vectors to final and get on with your life. Not that I trust Garmin 100% of the time, because I've seen the boxes do some things that I was really mystified me. But in this case, it's very logical in that you've got the magenta line that's leading you right to Dorpy, which then has a white line extending from it, which is going to be the next leg, which takes you to the runway. So I wasn't terribly confused. I mean, I probably would have been a moment of hesitation there when I saw that it wasn't aligned with the extended center line. But it appears very logical to me, as opposed to, like I said, some situations where I've seen the box do some things that when you look at it on the map of where it's going to take you, that it's not logical at all. I think, we're Monday morning quarterbacking this and stepping back and, you know, super analyzing it. But I think in the moment, I'm not sure that at least I would question it that much if that's what I saw. If the vectors to final depiction is what I saw when I activated vectors to final, which is really what we've been cleared for here, even though he didn't use those words, the controller didn't use those words in the clearance. It seems logical to me, and I would have used that.
Well, I would just go back again to what Wally said and what I said earlier, that here you've just flown a missed approach. You're in a complex high-performance airplane. And even if you think you've got this figured out and you're not confused as by the presentation you see on your GPS, I still think it's a good idea to proceed to a fix that's, or get a vector that's going to give you a little time to make sure you've taken care of the airplane. You've just done a missed approach. You've got a couple of checklists or cockpit flows to run. Make sure that you've put in the correct altimeter settings, all that kind of stuff that you need to do when you're going sort of quickly from, you know, one approach to another. This is almost like a training event. You know, when we, in the IFR training world, we go doing, you know, three approaches in an hour and a half, bouncing around. It's a high workload situation. And once you get out of that training environment, a lot of pilots aren't really set up to handle that kind of workload. They've gotten, you know, a little complacent. And that's not how you normally fly IFR. You don't normally have to go and divert and do, you know, two approaches in the space of 15, 20 minutes. So keep all that in mind. And really just when you're under pressure, even if you don't feel like your heart's beating really fast because this wasn't some kind of emergency, that's a clue to just slow down and make sure that you have taken care of things, you know, and set yourself up properly to fly an approach.
I want to go back for a moment to something that happened right before this, which is this pilot was hanging out at the initial approach fix for the approach into Nantucket, decided it was time to divert, but decided, I'm going to fly the approach anyway and just see what happens even though it's 800 RVR. Is that a good idea?
I would never attempt that unless I'm doing training or something like that. But, you know, if I can't land at an airport, I'm not going to make an attempt to go, you know, and look and see. That to me is just setting yourselves up for making a mistake, especially if you're, you know, if you've done a lot of approaches in you know, low IFR conditions, maybe. But in most cases, I'm actually going to then just say to air traffic control, I'm going to my alternate, or specifically state, hey, I'm going to this particular airport because the weather is not necessarily going to allow me to get in.
Well, I wouldn't do it, but for entirely different reason, not having to do so much with safety, but having to do with, I like to not interact with the agency as much as I can. I don't want to interact with them. And I know a pilot who actually got a 90-day suspension for landing at Nantucket when it was below RVR. So I would not do it there. The RVR is 800, and I don't have the plate up, but I know the published RVR is probably 24.
It's 1800. It's 18.
But I also want to say something else about RVR that I learned a couple of years ago trying to get into Groton. AOPA had asked me to do a presentation for them there. And I went there, and it was a pretty lousy day, as it can very well be in Groton. And the first approach, the RVR was below, but there was a line of us waiting to go in, and they actually cleared me for the approach. I didn't expect to make it. I got down to DA. I could see a sailboat mast below me, but I couldn't see runway lighting or anything, and I went missed. Very interestingly, as soon as I went to Providence, they asked me before I could say anything else, do you want to go back for a second time? I said, sure. I went back for a second time. On it, the RVR came up. And the RVR came up to 4,000. I said, yeah, I've got this made. I flew the approach, got vectored coming down. I have an aspen. There went the green bug saying 500 to go. Here came the barber pole saying 200 to go. Still don't see a thing. I got to DA. Here came the orange bug. Started to come in with power, and I saw the approach lights. And I continued on down, being allowed to do that with the approach lights. And I only descended another 25 feet and broke out into basically severe clear underneath this marine layer. What was interesting is that the RVR said this was doable, and yet at the DA, if I had not had the approach lights, I would not have been able to get in. And so it made me realize that RVR is not always a 100% guarantee that you're going to make it in.
I'd like to just kind of expand on that a bit. I've worked at a few different airports along the coast, and watching the RVR display on the air traffic control side, depending on what the weather is doing, there's plenty of times where it's steady-ish and you just see it, like in our scenario where it's 800 RVR and it kind of sits there, and maybe it'll jump up to 1,000 and then back to 800 type of thing. But there's other times where the RVR jumps around significantly, and you might have it down to 800 to 1,000 for a minute or two, and then a few minutes later, it might be up to 4,000 RVR or more than 6,000, and then drop back down. And that's kind of the challenge of coastal airports sometimes, is the way the RVRs can jump around that way. And from an air traffic control standpoint, when you get a good RVR read and you've got a whole bunch of airplanes that want to land, ideally you're trying to get them on the ground as quickly as you can with a good RVR reading. And then there'll be times where that good RVR reading really goes to hell by the time they're actually getting to the time to make a decision on the approach and whether they're going to go missed or continue type of a thing. From that standpoint, there are times where the RVR, if you're part 91, you can try the approach if you want. You have that opportunity if you decide to. And there's times where if the RVR is on the lower side, well, maybe go take a look, because by the time you get there, it could jump up to higher. I'm not saying it's always going to be that case, but there is that possibility.
Yeah, so I'm going to do a little pro tip here for you guys. You know, what Doug said is that when, you know, he was descending down, he popped into essentially really good weather below the cloud deck per se. But when you have a vertical visibility showing on the METAR or even in a TAF, when you see that, that means you have an obscuration. And typically in those cases, you know, you don't have that kind of clear air right below the cloud deck. That can happen sometimes. But anytime you see vertical visibility, you know you've got some significant obscuration that's going on. And as a result of that, the visibility is usually pretty crappy below that cloud deck.
So maybe instead of this pilot taking 5 minutes to fly the approach just in case it worked, should have taken 5 minutes to brief the next one and then would have caught some of the unusual aspects of that approach. You know, he may have looked ahead and saw, well, this is just an RNAV approach, LPV minimums, it's 1,000 overcast, vectors to final, no problem. Missed some of the nuances here. And if he had taken the moment to really brief the approach, he might have said, like Bruce did, actually, this will be a lot simpler to just request direct to Maskey. And then it just becomes a standard, straightforward RNAV approach.